the beaten track on Park Radio. An in-depth look at what's going on in Banff National Park.
Welcome to Off the Beaten Track, a behind-the-scenes look into what's happening in Banff National Park and beyond. I'm your host, Michelle Maculo. This week, we'll speak with Stakeholder Relations Specialist Marjorie Husilak about the annual planning form, and we'll talk winter weather with Public Safety Specialist Brad White. The 12th Annual Banff National Park Planning Forum will be held at the Banff Center on October 29th and 30th. But what's it all about? Stakeholder Relations Specialist Marjorie Husilak now joins us in the studio to tell us about the forum, why it's important, and how you can get involved. Marjorie, it's nice to have you back here at Park Radio.
Well, it's great to be here again.
So we've got this annual planning forum happening at the end of the month. What's it all about?
Well, this year is the 12th annual Banff National Park Annual Planning Forum, and this is an important time of year for us to connect with our stakeholders, including the community, and let them know how we're progressing on meeting the obligations that we promised in the Banff National Park Management Plan. It's also a time of year for us to look at other initiatives that are going on in the park, like Banff's 125th anniversary next year.
So it sounds like it's a really great way to connect with the community and, for example, even our staff.
Well, actually, a lot of times when there are new people in the community that are very interested in the park, I always invite them and say, if you want to have a good sense of who is our community, of who helps manage Banff National Park, not just our employees, but others, it's a great way to interact, find out what's going on in the park, and also, if you wish, even participate and provide your own ideas or ask your questions.
So who's invited if this is sort of a formal and organized event?
Well, it certainly has evolved over the years. In the beginnings, it was a roundtable group of about 20 to 25 key stakeholder groups, and they were the only ones who could speak on behalf of the sectors they represented. It could be somebody from the provincial park system, an environmental representative nationally, to some of our local organizations like Banff Lake Louise Tourism. But as time came by, it was quite evident that our community wanted to participate as well. And so now we ensure that through the agenda and how we plan and what we deliver, people can participate through the 2 days. And more importantly, we actually have a special event that's targeted to our local community called the Superintendent's Fireside Chat. And that's a time in the evening after work where people can get together with a cup of tea or coffee and have a cookie and talk to the superintendents, ask those questions that you've wanted to ask, or provide your guidance and advice about something that you think Banff National Park requires.
And when and where is that taking place?
Well, this year, through the feedback of our stakeholders, we've been told that have it at a centralized location. So thanks to the Banff YWCA, we'll actually have it in the fireplace in our room and have it in the great room at the Banff YWCA. It'll be at 7 o'clock on Thursday of the annual planning forum.
And that's really great because by having it in a central location and given the demographic of the people who stay at the Y, this might really give the park a chance to connect with the youth.
Well, we're really hoping that a lot of people that are from that 18 to 25 year range that come to live here for a few years and want to ski, but they always seem to want to get to know a little bit more about Banff National Park. So we're actually going to be in their living room providing this session for them to come to either listen or actively participate in how they think their park should be managed.
And I guess it's a chance, too, to sort of get them involved in the future of the park.
Well, one thing that I really strongly believe, the Banff National Park is not managed by one individual or park employees. It is really takes a passionate community of our stakeholders, our employees, and other community members to ensure that this place remains special in the future and is a place that they see and visualize for the future.
And a place that hopefully is relevant to them, because relevance really ensures or at the very least garners attention and interest.
Well, and I think that's why there's the ways of connection. You know, we can connect whether we're on our snowboard or we are going for a hike with our just by ourselves and the many beautiful places, or being with our friends. But part of that connection is also ensuring that everybody feels that this place belongs to them. And that's what's special about Canada's national parks. They belong to all Canadians. And they are for Canadians for today and for the future.
And Can you explain a little bit? You were talking about that this is the 12th form. There's a little bit of history. Did the park make some kind of a commitment, or how was it decided that we would sort of have this annual reporting in an interactive forum?
Well, it's really interesting to watch its history. And in my work of stakeholder relations, it really shows how we as a community and a park have evolved and what people's expectations were. About 15 years ago, things were many times quite tense, and you need to have a little bit of tension to make something be healthy. And we don't want everybody to have the same, even today, having the same opinions about things. It's that tension and that communication that creates us to move forward and ask questions and see where we need to go. But things were so difficult in a period of time that actually the government of Canada funded a $2.5 million study called the Bow Valley Study to really ask what is Banff National Park and what should it be in the future. And at that time, great efforts were to reach out and not have bureaucrats managing the system. They brought visionaries such as Dr. Bob Page into the system. And with that, part of it was creating a set of roundtable members representing various sectors. And those sectors also had some other groups that they belonged to. Things were quite formalized in those periods of times because there was a lot of tension between different groups. And it had to be that way until trust could be built. Well, the concept of a roundtable was so successful, it was one of the commitments that was made in the management plan in 1997. It includes part of our obligation that we're going to be open management and that people need to feel that they are part of making the decisions of where their park should be in the future. So we started with the roundtable as once a year as an accountability way for us to kind of take a look at what's going on in the park, what have we done to accomplish what we said we would do in the management plan, and also maybe what are some of the other actions that we should do. But every year, it's like taking a rock and making it into a gemstone. And with the feedback that we get from those community members that participate and also the roundtable members, we continue to evolve how this roundtable is, how the annual planning forum will be. And so it looks very different than it did 12 years ago. And I remember when our superintendent right now, Kevin Van Tegum, came before he became the superintendent, he said he couldn't believe the maturity of these roundtable members because even though they sometimes have political differences in views of how this park should be managed, there's still a respect for each other and still a motivation to work for that future of the park. So that's where our evolution is.
And you'd mentioned earlier about Banff's 125th celebrations for 2010. What else will be discussed at the forum, or sort of what's the framework we'll be looking at this year?
In addition to the 125th celebrations, we're also going to be looking at where are we with the whole management plan review that we're in progress, and that will take a considerable amount of the time. And the other thing is that looking at how should the roundtable be in the future, and what about the future of advisory groups in the future? We have some incredibly dedicated people. I was just working on our list of stakeholders, and there are several of them that belong up to 5 different advisory groups for our park. You know, that's taking a lot of their time to help us mold the future of this park. So we want to ensure that people feel that their time is well used, that they are making a contribution, and it's worthwhile for them. So what do we need to ensure that advisory groups in the future are what our stakeholders need and what we need in the future?
And can you talk to us a little bit about the importance of the management plan and why that is more than just a document and how that really makes us accountable for how we manage the park and I guess is setting expectations and possibly opportunities for the future?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's almost like I think when you look, and it's so funny now that we're in the 125th anniversary of Banff National Park, 125 years is quite a journey. And if you think of the park of almost being like a sailboat, you have, you know, the structure underneath, which is your legislation and your policies, and you have those things that are the masts that hold up things. But it's really the actual sails that help us move the direction of where the park's going to be. And it tells the public and it gives an accountability of what we're going to do to manage this park in the future. So it's a really, the management plan is the guiding document that provides of where this park is going to be in the next 15 years and what are we going to do to get it to that direction.
So I wanted to ask you about that. How many years are the park plans done?
Well, the management plans are done for a 15-year cycle, but they're reviewed every 5 years. We have now passed our 15-year mark, and what we're doing a little bit different, we waited a few years, is trying to have them all on the same timelines for all the mountain parks, so there can be some consistency of our direction. So, for example, with the renewal that Parks Canada is moving through right now and looking about better engagement in connection with Canadians, we want to ensure that that is woven through what our management plan will say. And also, but still meet the foundation of our mandate, which is all about protection, education, and visitor experience, and how those three must be woven together to ensure that the organization remains strong.
So this year, the forum is being held on October 29th and 30th at the Banff Centre. What room and I guess what times are we looking at?
It's one of my favorite buildings. It's the Laszlo Funtech Building.
I love that name.
It's just the best name in the world. And it is right next to the theater complexes. So if you park where in the parkade where next to the theaters, you're right next door to the building. It's in room 224. But also what's really important, and I'm hoping we're going to get a lot of people out too, is our community event, which is the Fireside Chat. We're trying to have it in downtown Banff, and I'm hoping that a lot of people will go to that. So the Fireside Chat will be at the Banff YWCA Great Room on Thursday at 7 o'clock.
And everyone's welcome.
Yeah. And if anybody has any questions, you can also give me a call. And my phone number at work is 403-762-1562. But really hope to see you at the Annual Planning Forum, or most important, the Fireside Chat, because we'd love to see the community there.
Thanks so much. We'll be in touch again, Marjorie.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
After the break, Brad White talks to us about how mountain weather influences snow conditions in the mountain parks.
Off the Beaten Track, we'll be right back. And now back to Off the Beaten Track.
Welcome back to Off the Beaten Track. They say, if you don't like the weather in the mountains, wait 5 minutes. But winter mountain weather is more than blue skies and snowstorms. Public safety specialist Brad White now joins us in studio to talk about the different types of winter weather in the mountains and how they affect avalanche hazard. Brad, it's nice to see you.
Oh, welcome.
So can you talk to us a little bit about what you do for Parks Canada?
I'm a mountain safety program specialist. That means that I work, do rescue work and perform rescues. But in the wintertime, a big part of our job is doing avalanche forecasting and control for the parks, Banff, Yoho, and Kootenay National Park.
And so I would imagine weather sort of influences these forecasts that you guys do. Can you talk to us a little bit about the weather and how that impacts avalanche hazard in general?
Oh, sure. I think that's why we're here. So on a day-to-day basis, the precip amounts are the biggest thing you want to look at. But overall, if you're a park user and you're thinking about how can I get a better understanding of what the weather is doing to the snowpack, I think you, if you just track the major trends over the winter, you'll have a great basis before you go on the day you're going. So if you're in Canmore or Calgary or even somewhere else, it's easy to track what the weather is doing in Banff these days. So as a general rule, long periods of weather will set up the snowpack. So the longer you have a period of weather that's doing one specific thing, the more likely it will create a layer. Quite frequently we have long cold periods in the Rockies, and those long cold periods will create weak sugary snow. They often you'll have crusts that are associated with that on steep southerly slopes where the sun's been shining on it. You'll have surface hoar, which is like wintertime dew, that forms in those long cold periods. So the longer the cold period, the more likelihood that it's going to create a layer that's going to be an issue, and you're going to have to track it through the winter. You know, it might be what we term a persistent weak layer.
Can we maybe touch briefly upon, often in November we have what's called that November rain crest. What does that mean, and how does that sort of set up for either tenuous conditions in the backcountry or, I don't know?
Well, this winter is a perfect example. We got some early season snow on the ground, and of course people are thinking about skiing. They think that's great, but generally speaking, if you have early season snow on the ground, just because of the temperature variations that we have, it often sets up for another one of these persistent weak layers that can be a problem all through the year. So think about maybe a half a meter of snow sitting on the north slopes there up in the upper elevations right now. We're going to get some warm weather. We know that's going to happen. It may rain right to the ridgetops again, quite possibly. So now that snow is going to have a crust on top of it. And if the snow is deep enough to cover the threshold on the ground, in other words, the roughness that's there, like the boulders or whatever, that layer can stick around literally all winter long. So early season snow isn't necessarily a great thing in terms of having good stability.
So if we do get that November rain crust, should that set off alarm bells, or should that send a certain message to people?
Well, we try and get in the forecasts, our avalanche bulletins, what layers we're tracking. So these persistent weak layers that like a rain crust, or it could be just the early season facets or the basal depth thor that we talk about, which are the weak, loose snow, that the snow that's on the ground when you have a clear, cold period early in the winter just basically turns from good solid snow into a weak, sugary base. Those things you will have to track, and we'll talk about it. But they're easy to find by digging down, and if you have a sense of what the weather's done to make those layers, then you'll know that you have to look for them. Whether or not we'll end up with an early November rain crust, it might even be October this year, just the way things have set up with the early cold and the early snow on the ground. For sure, what we're going to have is some kind of layers that you will have to track, and in the Rockies, we tend to have longer periods of cold, dry, less periods of lots of precip. So we tend to get those weaknesses. It's much more continental kind of air mass that affects us here. Having said that, a lot of people think about the more snow, the more avalanches. Not necessarily so. The years that we get lots of warm westerly flow here, many storms one after the other, yes, you do have some small avalanches that form when the snow is falling, but they're direct action avalanches. And often you go get these big layers that form in long dry periods or like we tend to get normally in the wintertime here. Yeah.
And you guys are still posting at www.avalanche.ca?
Yeah, that's correct. You can find the park's forecast right there, and there's a link on the homepage that takes you directly to our park's homepage where the park's avalanches are as well.
And so in addition to weather and sort of the different types of systems we have here, do you find that there are patterns in terms of certain months of the year, or is it all very much dependent on what Mother Nature tends to give us at any given time?
In the Rockies, you can pretty much expect that the early season is not going to be the time to do those great descents. We have a shallow snowpack generally, you know, relative certainly to the interior and the coast. And if you only have a meter and a half of snow on the ground, it's much more susceptible to this faceting and depth hoar process with cold, clear nights. So early in the season, you tend to have a lot of rocky, poor, bonded slopes with maybe a little wind slab on them, and those early season deep weaknesses usually don't go away until March. So we've been lucky over the past few years. We've had some moderate winters, and we actually had some decent traveling a couple of winters ago early in the season, but you don't want to start making your terrain judgments based on one winter. In general, just conservative route selection until we get a deeper, more stable snowpack and the early season deep weaknesses go away. That's would be a good rule of thumb.
What would be some areas you would recommend then, say, for example, if the hazard is high and the layers are either unstable or the weather isn't really conducive to going on those big adventures?
Well, one thing we really haven't talked about yet, we talked a little bit about precipitation, we talked a little bit about temperatures. Wind is the other big factor that redistributes the snow. So kind of counterintuitively here, sometimes the places where the wind is blowing the snow in are the best places. So the big fat areas actually have a thicker snowpack and they're a little better. they may have wind slabs on them as well. It's all about the local conditions. But early in the season or through mid-season, often I will go to a place that's moderately angled. So we're talking like maybe less than 35 degrees and fatter. So well blown in. So it's probably better supported and a better place to go than some place that's thin. More likelihood of collapsing a slab over a week layer and often getting scrubbed through the rocks as a consequence, you know. Yeah.
So you were mentioning terrain, and you just spoke of angles. Can you tell us a little bit about some angles to avoid, or maybe where you want to be when? You talked about when that hazard is high, you know, picking some lower grades, I guess.
Yeah, I guess maybe we'll back up. You talked about high danger. High danger and extreme danger, very high likelihood of triggering avalanches. Those days are actually not that tricky to choose terrain because you go to the low angle terrain without anything over your head. And, you know, it's pretty clear that it's not a good time. When the danger's in the high end of moderate or in the considerable range, then the likelihood of triggering goes down. But there's still that chance you could trigger something. So that's where you really have to choose your terrain to say, well, my confidence in the snowpack is low. I'm not sure if I'm going to trigger something here or not. So I'm going to choose some terrain that is less likely to be triggered just in terms of slope angle. Or if something does go wrong, there's low consequence if the slope slides. So it's all about human consequences in the end if you're not sure.
Well, this is also a good time to sort of remind the listeners that it's ideal to plan your trips and to think about things before you get in your car and just look at a slope and say, yeah, that looks fun.
Absolutely. I mean, the trip starts a day ahead, and more than just the idea of a trip is building options into your trip. Most trips or slopes of a longer length that are a little more complicated, they'll have one or two places that are key, and if you've already thought about how you're going to deal with that and what you're going to do if it isn't working out based on the conditions you find out there, then it's very simple to move to your alternate. Oftentimes, folks will get a little bit focused on a goal and then carry on regardless. And because they haven't thought of options, then they're more willing to push themselves into something where maybe the conditions don't warrant it that day.
And I guess there's something to be said, too, for learning a little bit about snow safety and taking some courses.
Well, all of your travel in the winter relates around knowing what your abilities are and making decisions based around the ability and your training level. Of course, we talk about taking avalanche courses so your awareness goes up. Unfortunately, the awareness courses and even the earlier avalanche courses don't really teach you how to be a good decision maker in terrain. They talk about what to look for a little bit. So there isn't one silver bullet that's going to make it easy for you to decide on any given slope. There are some tools out there. The Evaluator is one that will help you in conjunction with our Avalanche Bulletin. And in essence, what it does, it ties the park's avalanche terrain rating system together with the daily bulletin rating and then gives you an idea of what kind of terrain might be appropriate on that day. We couldn't leave this without talking about beacons, shovels, probes. Those are just basically like the seatbelt and airbag in your car. I mean, they're there, and you have to know how to use them, and hopefully you never have to use them, except for maybe using your shovel and probe to do some snow evaluations as you're traveling. But you have to train so that if something does go wrong, it's the last course scenario, right? Just because you have an airbag and a seatbelt in your car doesn't mean that you can drive your car off the cliff and you're going to survive, right? You might, if all else goes bad.
No, fair enough. And Brad, I hope we can bring you back in here later on in the winter to talk a little bit more about fun ways to enjoy the park safely. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks. And the park is out there to be enjoyed. It's open. It's basically up to the traveler to make sure that they have the skills and abilities and decision-making to use it wisely and when the time is right.
If you have any comments on what you heard on the show this week, give our feedback line a call at 403-762-1536 or send us an email to feedback@parkradio.ca and we'll play your comments on a future show. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Michelle Maculo. We'll catch you next time, Off the Beaten Track.
Off the Beaten Track, only on Park Radio 101.1 FM.